Welcome back to the doctor's office. I am Dr. Kaori Knight, here to give you proper diagnosis and prognosis and everything comics and comic book characters. And we have this person who's with me all the time. And then we have a super special guest. So, Captain Diesel, you can introduce yourself first and we can get an introduction for our special guest.
Oh, yeah. Like she said, I'm here all the time. I have no name. I'm Captain Diesel. I cover all things nerdy, comics included, is one of my personal favorites. So I'm glad to be here with the very special guest.
And our very special guest is the writer for Storm and the award winner for a award in the Fist Award, right? Comic-Con in Lagos. Yeah, I saw that. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
So my name is Moriwa Adeli. I'm a comic book writer from Nigeria. I've been working in the comic book industry for almost a decade now. I've worked on series like I Am Iron Man, the current Storm series, on Moon Knight, Black, White, and Blood, Avengers Unlimited, and stuff like that. So yeah, it's nice to be here.
Well, thank you so much for joining. I honestly didn't think anybody was paying attention to my Storm reviews. So thank you. So with that being said, before we get into the main event, you did bring up two comic books that I actually did read because Moon Knight is my absolute favorite character ever. And you did the one story in the Black, White, and Blood. How was that for you?
That was the first work we ever did with Marvel, and it was scary, but in a different way that you would expect. Because when we got the call from Marvel and we're already working on the project, they suddenly asked us to stop working, that it might not work out. And that was because they were having issues with some documents, because I was based in Nigeria, and you know, so many tools. It was like they don't have like all this work treaty and stuff between the US and Nigeria, that so if they can't find a way to pay us, it's not good for them legal wise, so they might have to not use us for that project. And so we were so scared, so we had to look for so many ways to like get the papers signed and everything. So but once that was done, I didn't even think about the fact that so many eyes would be on the book. I was just excited to like work on Moon Knight, work on Spider-Man. I didn't even think of the pressures of, oh yeah, people will get to read this. It wasn't conscious. So it was when the book came out and those Spider-Man fans especially jumped on the story and they loved it. So it was a good first run. You know, I don't know where I would be now if that first story like bombed and I got so many like bad reviews or something. Maybe I would have been like, nah, I don't think this Marvel thing is for me.
I definitely did read some of the comments going through some of the PM. They absolutely loved that story in particular. And that one was definitely one of my favorites. It captured Moon Knight and Spider-Man's relationship in comics like really well. And I was like, yeah, I like this. I like this.
With that in particular, I'm curious, when building out this, the dynamic between those two characters and just tackling two historic characters in that in Marvel, how much back research did you do in regards to like what material you read to prepare you for that, to make sure you embody those characters?
One does a lot of research, but then you try to do research on things you like. So for example, Spider-Man has varying voices depending on the writer, and I really wanted that voice that I love from Ultimate Spider-Man, the cartoon series. So even though it was animation, I really wanted that voice. And for people that watched that cartoon show, they were like, yeah, that's basically the Peter Parker from that show talking, you know, the kind of like with the Bendis-esque kind of way of talking. So that's why I went with for the voice. So you do research for voice, like how the characters talk. So for Moon Knight, I was going more with Warren Ellis and Declan Shalvey's miniseries on Moon Knight. So that was kind of voice I was going for. And then you now do like general research on, oh, have they interacted together? What are the things, you know, and stuff like that. And then some parts of it that maybe some other writers don't do is I also consider what's like the fandom space, what things they expect from that interaction. And you see a lot of memes and jokes about Spider-Man and Moon Knight that are not even canon, you know? And you look at that dynamics and I'm like, you know what, I'll bring these dynamics here. So everybody saw that and I'm like, yeah, you know, Spider-Man is supposed to be joshing him and all those stuff like that, you know? So played around with that a lot too. So that was very fun for people to see. The Moon Knight I wrote is almost similar to like the Moon Knight that could say, you know, let's get this bread. Or the one that was asking Dracula that you owe me some money, you know, and all those kind of stuff. So yeah, you play around with that as well. Just comics should be fun.
That is genius to use like the actual meme in the fake panels. That's crazy. That's fine. That's fine.
So just as because you, it says that you've been a writer for a really long time, decade basically. As a writer, how does it feel to have like your work not only with like the Moon Knight or the I Am Iron Man or the Marvel voices you did with the Wakanda Forever or even the graphic novel Akugan?
Yeah, Akugan, Brutalized, of course.
Yes. Yeah. Like how does that feel to have like your work noticed in such like a high capacity?
Yeah, it's feels weird. Like when I think Storm issue 3 was like on Amazon, like bestseller list was like the number 3 comic book superhero this thing. But I was like, oh, this is a simulation. Like at that point, I was like, this is the Matrix. Like there's no way this is happening. Like, I don't know how I can explain it. Like, if I step out of my house right now, like I would see like chickens and goats like on the streets and all those stuff, you know? So it's like this guy from a little town in Nigeria surrounded by chickens and goats. And, you know, not saying that's where how everywhere in Nigeria is, but this is how where I live is. So, and it's like being number 3 on like the bestseller is like, yeah, this is the Matrix. Like I'm just going to wake up. Because I had so many issues when I was young. I'm like, I'm going to wake up and it's going to be like, oh, and it was all a dream and I'm going to hit the doctor that wakes me up from the coma or something. So at some point, I'm like, eh, if it's the Matrix, I think I would just wing it. So when issue 4 was not like the number one bestseller, I was like, yeah, I think maybe sometime I'll still wake up or something. But for now, let's enjoy it. So it does feel unreal, you know, like I think we said before we started this recording is this stream is I've never even been to the US before, so hearing that people in the US love what I'm writing, you know, it's just very it can feel very strange and you don't want to think about it too much because then you might get in your way.
Did you have another
one? Oh no, I was letting you take the direction. I meant to ask this earlier before the show started. I didn't want to burn out all the questions before the show actually started, but because you mentioned that you've never been to the States before, so I'm so curious as to how that connection, like how you actually got in contact with Marvel or different avenues to actually create comic books, because I feel like because comics are such a American form of media, I guess, originally. In my mind, it never occurred to me that people outside of the country would be writing the stories without even stepping foot in the country.
I've always loved animation and comics. And I've always been interested in it. But I have my friend called Dr. Akande. He's a phenomenal artist, also at Marvel currently too. And at that time, we were working on so many projects, publishing them for free online. Then we eventually started one called My Grandfather Was a God. which we published on mm-hmm. Webtoons. So, and, you know, we love what we were putting together. And at that time, I guess maybe we were being a little bit proud and cocky. So, like, you know what? We think this story is so good. We're going to send it to, like, every creator, every editor that we've always enjoyed their work, to be like, okay, we've always enjoyed your work for years. Here is our work. Enjoy as well, you know. So I think I paid for IMDb Pro so that I could get emails of, like, agents of, like, Genndy Tartakovsky that did Samurai Jack and things that I really liked. You know, I saw some, like, some weird sketchy websites where you could get emails of Marvel editors, you know, and stuff. So I got, like, 3 prompts of maybe what Tom Brevoort's email could, like, be, or I think it was Alana Smith. Yeah. So from Alana Smith, and I got Tom Brevoort's email. So it was just very distant. So sent an email to, like, Marvel editors as well, saying, oh yeah, check out this. My grandfather was a god. So I think mm-hmm. Tom Brevoort said one of his lunch breaks, he read the comic, read the first couple of issues, and is like, oh, I want to work with these guys. And coincidentally, he just got the green light to assemble a team together to work on Moon Knight's Black, White, and Blood. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to try these guys out on this project. And so that's how it started. So it's from our work on the webtoons. And it's what a lot of Marvel editors say, even on, like, different interviews and stuff, is the weird thing about comics is, to get into comics, you have to have gotten into comics. It's weird that we, like, you need comics to get into comics. So mm-hmm. we needed to have made our own comic, a full-blown comic, tell a full-blown story, put together in a professional way, so that they can be like, okay, we can trust you to come to do stuff for us. So yeah, that was great.
It makes sense. That's so dope. So I guess you get the blueprint for people now that are asking that question, because that's something that, especially me, like, I've created a comic with a friend of mine, but it was so, a lot of it, I think that's a lot of people's first question is, like, how do I get into the industry if I'm an aspiring artist or writer and things like that? That's dope. That's dope.
Okay. One more about you question before we get into listen, okay? Because he is you guys got the Studio of the Year award, and, like, the awards that you guys have accumulated or been nominated for, like, how is that feeling? Because I know one was the Fist Award, like I said earlier, in Lagos at Comic-Con in, like, 2023. Like, that sounds like a really big award. So how was that for you guys?
Funny enough, we were angry because we thought we deserved more. So I think when we started our comic book studio, Dr. and myself, you know, we put our heart and soul into all the comics we put together. You know, there was this artist called Akman Godwin that every other studio in the country only used him for, like, their covers. So, like, the Alex Ross of, you know, the industry, basically, you know. And we're like, this guy that you all use for your covers, we're going to use him to color our internal pages. You know, that's how badass every single page is going to be. I think some people saw some of our work and AI wasn't, like, in vogue or anything. They were like, these guys are probably, like, using, like, computer stuff to, like, generate this thing. There's no way anyone is doing stuff like this. So art-wise, everything, we were trying to create unique stories and breathtaking stuff, being very, very ambitious with the stories. And so we're like, man, when we get to this award, we're going to, like, you know, clear everything and stuff like that. And we barely got considered for a lot of them and all those things. And we're like, and you know, sometimes the colorist that we use for our work, we get nominated for the work he did for another company, but ours will not be listed. Even the one we won for, like, best cover and stuff in that first year, they called the name of the project, but they refused to mention our names. So we're, like, so upset. Like, it felt almost like, oh, the new kid, we're not going to like give the new kids, you have to work for it and that kind of thing. And right. So we're like upset and be like, you know, middle finger to you, you know what? If you're not going to give us the recognition we want, we're going to go outside the country and get it ourselves, thinking it was easy to get into the American market and stuff like that. So that's where we started. And I think we first worked with Action Lab, you know, and that was in the US, Story World Media in the UK, you know, and, you know, climbing up that ladder gradually, but it was very, very tough. A lot of all the, I think we got humble real quick when we started sending proposals out. So like, you know, Image Comics, this is what you needed, you know? And they're like, and you know, like, sorry guys, we don't even want this, not stock of need, it's not like, so all the constant rejections and stuff, I think it made us just sit down and try to get better and stuff like that. So yeah, so those are what came, but at that time they were coming bit by bit, and it's not like, and we felt like we deserved more and stuff, but gradually we became like more grateful, like, you know what, thank you for at least just considering us or something, you know. And so yeah, it was a lot of prideful habits and work and hard work and hurt feelings and so many things mixed together.
I feel that. Okay, we can go into. So as you guys know, he's the writer for Storm, and we are 4 issues in, and it is absolutely fabulous. Charlie, I'm sensing Captain Diesel has
all the questions. Initially, I had been briefly keeping up with the story because my guy Ernie Blur Without Fear had did like a video or two at the beginning of the run. So I was like, you know what, you know, Storm getting their solo run, that's good to see. You know, we love to see our favorite black characters get their representation. So like, I'll check it out at some point. So I watched that first video, and from the snippets I saw, I'm like, okay, I have to read this. And I sat down and I binged all 4 recently, from start to finish. And so the first question I have for you is, in the 4th issue, in like the Stormcast section at the end, where you were kind of responding back to people sending in emails, you gave like a brief story of part of your upbringing in regards to your heart defect when you were born, and that being a big motivator for some of the story beats you chose to go with the story. I'm so curious as to, is that something in a story you've been waiting to use for a long time in regards to that part of your personal story, or in future stories you have, or past stories you've had, how much of yourself do you try to put into those stories? Because this seems like most of this Storm run feels like it's like taken directly from your life experience down there.
I think it's a lot of stories, because I think the first proper series we did at Marvel is with Iron Man, and Tony Stark basically is, you know, is known for having like a bad heart, especially in the LA. So yeah, that's why he's one of my favorite heroes. So it's something I played around with while working on Iron Man, especially issue 2, I think, which is called like the bleeding heart or something like that, which was basically what was happening to my heart at the same time it was bleeding. So so yeah, it's because of that, going through that very early, like a kid should not be so aware of mortality and the fact that, oh, death can come knocking at any time. So I think it might have made me hypersensitive and hyper-aware to stories about death, especially death and resurrections. And so I think stories I tell usually surround mortality and our reactions to mortality and how it affects how we behave. So just like you said, like in the Storm series, like even our choices on who to visit and everything, it's all motivated by the mortality that is at the edge, that is always close by. So yeah, I think maybe I'm putting more into this series because there are more issues. you know, because you know, Ayamayama is just like 5 issues, Akogun is like 3. So maybe because this is like an ongoing series, so it's taking more out of me, I guess.
It's beautiful to see that. And I love the aspect of, I think for a lot of people, when you see Storm from the animated series or in any of the stories she's in, she is a goddess. She is a, like, her mortality is the second thing to ever be thought of, if thought of at all. So for her to have this, like, for lack of a better term, like Angela Bassett-esque energy of like she approaches the world as if she's already royalty, and she has this goddess demeanor. But at the same time, she's dealing with this mortal issue with the radiation poisoning. It was so beautiful to see you tie those two together. It's really weird, and I thought it would be really difficult for somebody to express how much of a goddess she actually is while also humanizing her at the same time and making her such a person. And I think you having her interactions with the X-Men and her interacting with, like, Rogue and Logan while also doing all this other stuff was so perfectly done in regards to, like, who you decided to bring in and be a part of the story.
Yeah, thank you very much. That was a major goal myself, because when I was doing research into, like, the Storm series, I was like, there were all these different eras in our time where, oh, like, she's like this badass warrior queen, you know, and there are also this point where she's like this motherly figure to, like, Kitty, and she's caring, she's feminine. Like, why do we always have to swing the pendulum? Like, oh, in this era, she's hardcore and fierce. In this era, she's softer. Why can't we have both at the same time? And that was the goal for this series. Like, they don't have to be something that is this or this. It can be and. And that was definitely the goal stepping into this project.
Kiora, I know I'm taking over Kiora. I'm so sorry.
So actually, that reminds me of, like, a conversation that I've had with people when it comes to the Joker in DC, where they feel like they have to, he's an anarchist, or he's this, or he's that, when in reality, he can be all of those things. Yes. And I think that's always the flawed writing when it comes to a lot of characters, is they pick and choose which aspects. So I love when people, like, well, I love the fact that you've meshed those together for her. I think one of the comments on my video that you commented on was more so the relationship between her and Logan, which is absolutely one of my favorite relationships in comic books ever. I love them as a couple. I love them so much. Like what I said in my video, I didn't want her story kind of just to fall back on, like, how so many people have done with her character, where it falls back on a relationship that she's previously had. But do you think that at some point in time, her status that you have her as now would fall in the background to a relationship that she has?
I think, allow me to also expand the story in, I think I've also seen someone also mention the fact that, oh yeah, she's dealing with a lot of masculine figures in the story. Like, Eternity is a masculine presenting entity, you know, Doom, Voodoo, Wolverine, so all those things too. But that's all deliberate. It's number one is, I'm also trying to tackle Storm from the perspective of a thunder deity. She's a goddess. And if you notice the narration, if you notice how we talk about Storm, she's addressed more as a thunder deity than a mutant itself. So, and in my research of thunder deities, you know, looking at from different cultures, from, you know, African cultures like the Yoruba pantheon, the Asgardian pantheon, you know, the Japanese Kamis, you know, and so many other ones, there's usually a thunder deity, and they usually have similar traits. You know, they're fierce, you know, they're fighters, you know, and so many other things. They're usually gods that you even invoke during war, even though they are not war gods. Like, Ogun is the god of war in Yoruba mythology, but a lot of warriors worship Sango more than Ogun, even though, because and Sango is just a thunder god. It's just that fierceness they have. You know, same thing in Greek mythology. You know, Ares is the god of war, but we all know Zeus will smite him down, and he's the thunder god. So it's that, that's fierce. But how many of them are women?
Right.
So, and I think the only one I know is Oya. And even in Oya's story, it's if you do all research in the stories that Sango has like this this way of getting his mystical powers, like they're called like thunderstones or something, and it's like Oya stole some of them, you know. It's like it's almost like he stole that power from him. So it's that it's still linked to Sango. So it's so Storm is like the only one that's like, I'm who I am. I'm not borrowing strength from anyone. I'm who I am. And she's a woman. And it's about interact. If I want to tell this story about a female deity amongst male figures and being a woman in a man's world, and in the superhero community as well, you have more male heroes than female heroes. So that's something I want to talk about, and I think that might be why it might be coming up a little, like, oh, maybe the relationship would take a big chunk of her life because there are a lot of men surrounding her, but not really. It might seem that way, but the story is basically to show how a woman can still stand tall and strong despite being surrounded by women, by men in a men-dominated field. So that's the kind of story we're trying to tell. So yes, she would have like relationships, she would have like different things, but it's all about how she can stand strong amongst men.
I find it interesting because to your point in regards to her standing up amongst men, I don't know how deliberate this was, but I've noticed that the dichotomy of the different men she interacts with throughout the story, because I feel like in each issue there's some form of a man in power, whether that be Doom, Logan, I can't remember the doctor's name off the top of my head.
From Dr. Voodoo.
Not Dr. Voodoo, but the other doctor from the Mutant Hospital.
Yeah.
Each one has a very different type of way of communication. Rather that be very more soft, or even if she was speaking with Tony, where they're either softer to her and sweeter to her, like a Brother Voodoo, the egotistic nature of a Doom. And you see her still like approach each conversation with a sense of grace. And it's interesting to your point that she's approaching every type of man and masculinity possible and still carrying herself with that level of grace and keeping her demeanor about her.
Yeah, like Dr. Day coming off almost very repulsive in nature, the way he speaks to her and everything. Mm-hmm. And being able to identify that, I think he's just spouting all these things because there's a hurt deep in him.
Mm-hmm.
And she calms down, even though she was angry, and I'm like, what's really wrong? You know, what have the X-Men really done to you? So, you know. And then he's able to open up and things like that. So it's about navigating all that. So it's sometimes it's going to be combative as we go on, but sometimes it's either being, you know, persuasive or standing your ground and different ways. Like, how do you navigate a male-dominated field?
A question I would have in regards to her and a lot of the history behind her. Because I think you were very intentional with this. I'm curious too, how much interaction you and the artist Lucas Wardneck had in regards to her design choices. Because in the first issue, as you're giving her narration and kind of giving people that may not be as familiar with the character as to her history, you're also doing this amazing thing where you're in her wardrobe, I guess in her closet, for lack of a better term. She's going through the different eras of herself and the different versions there has been. And as you're getting this narration as to her, you're also seeing those different versions of her. How did you guys go about deciding what this final look of her attire would look like, at least for this first couple of issues? Because you've you've seen all the iconic versions of her. And I think even between the first issue and the second one, you guys kind of play around with the different wardrobes she had, because I think she did like a slight wardrobe change in the second issue with the beginning wearing her white traditional garb. But at least from what I'm seeing in most of the cover arts and in some of it, you're kind of settling in on a particular look for her with the earrings and her black attire. How did you kind of come to figuring out which way you wanted to display her with all the different versions you could have possibly went with?
Yeah. Number one, Lucas Wernick is like probably some of the best designer in the comic book industry. And not just in costume, in character design, in architectural design, is one of the best, if not the best, in the industry right now. Is very, very good. But also when I was approaching this project, there were a bunch of things that I had in mind for this work. Number one is, I've always loved all those cartoon shows where Spider-Man gets like this cool costume from S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, and they give him this cool S.H.I.E.L.D. costume and everything. But I was always very angry because after that episode, and Spider-Man has to like sneak into a building, all of a sudden we don't see the S.H.I.E.L.D. costume anymore. Like, what the hell is going on? Like, you had this like cloaking this thing and we never see it anymore. Like, oh, Iron Man is one of my favorite heroes. You know, Iron Man uses this big celestial buster armor that was able to go toe-to-toe with the old celestial. But suddenly, you know, Thanos is around and there's no way he can fight. Like, dude, use the giant robot and smash him to the ground. Like, is this so hard, you know? And so it's something I've always been aware of in that aspect. And also, there was a time where I was dating this girl where I got her to watch Daria, and she was loving it and suddenly just stopped. I was like, why? And she's like, because they were always wearing the same clothes every time and I got tired of it. So, you know, so that too. So all that's mixing together, like, oh, I want fashion to play a large role in this comic. And I don't want her to just have one costume. I want her to have four, depending on the mission she's going on and what they all say about different aspects of her character. So the black and gold costume was designed with the editorial. That's Lucas and editorial. I necessarily didn't have much input in that. That one is more of an Avengers look, a superhero look. So but we designed together the white and gold costume. That is called the Brutal Storm costume. That is more of like the full jumpsuit, reminiscent of more of a 90s era, another era where she was more fierce and things like that. So it's more of a combative costume. Then we have the Eternal Storm look, which is the cosmic look. And that one has more African flavors, you know. The clothes have the wrappings with gold, like with this Egyptian aesthetics, because we know that she grew up at some point in Egypt. That's the facial, the face paint of sub-Saharan Africa, because she also grew up there, you know. And, you know, the crown from her first appearance and all those stuff. Like, so it has more of an African vibe. And then we're going to have a fourth costume, which that one will come up in Storm 6, which is more of an armored look. This is when things get tough. You know, this is when Thanos comes around. This is when something, you know, and it's like, I'm in a full vibranium armor. You know, let's go toe-to-toe, you know, and that kind of thing. So she's going to be alternating between these costumes depending on the missions and depending on what we want to say about you know. So, and sometimes just because it looks cool, you know, seeing the white costume at night is going to look way cooler than, you know, the black costume, you know. So you know, so different stuff like that. So it's, we're paying close attention to it, and both in the costume and every, so like in the training montage, the fact that every day she changes the clothes, you know, the dinner with Voodoo, the dinner with Dr. Doom, you know, the dress. Lucas went
that was to
gorgeous dress. Oh my god, that dress was beautiful.
That was like the fifth. That was like the fifth try. The fifth try because Lucas just wanted to make sure it was gorgeous. He designed one; it was awesome. It's like, no, I can do better. He did another one; it's like, I can do better. You know, to like the fifth trial, and it's like, yes, this is perfect. Because we needed something that would look good on Storm, would be gorgeous, but you could see a little bit of Rogue's flavor. That okay, I can see why Rogue would choose this. So it shouldn't fit too perfectly with Storm that you would be like, no, Rogue will never wear this. So it should still feel that way and everything. So not just in color, but in style as well. So the puffy shoulders, for example, can be like, oh yeah, I can see, you know, Rogue choosing something like this. So stuff that, so that's, we've been playing around with fashion a lot and clothing. Even Dr. Doom, you know, is the little things, and you notice, you know, like, oh yeah, he should wear a fur cape, you know, let's say that fur, you know, silhouetting against his figure, you know, and you know, the way he pops it and gives it to his minions to like pick it up, you know, it's just those little things. Yeah, they're very, very cool, you know. So yeah,
it's that. To that fashion regard, too, I kind of want to expound upon not even the superhero garb she wears, but like the regular day to day African inspired clothes she wears.
She's always been a fashionista, though, like from the shows to a lot of the comics, like even the comic where she went up against Princess Xanda and they fought in the store. And she was like, you could never afford anything in here. And she was like, please. she's always been one of my favorite fashion, between her and Emma Frost, especially when they do the Hellfire Gala. They have the best outfits in comic books. I can't. And that green dress was just.
She looks amazing in everything she's in this story.
Yes.
That's what I'm gushing over. Oh, they. Because I've seen other stuff. I've seen like the way McDuffie like speak on that in like the Fantastic Four run he did, where her hair is such an important thing to her, and like she sees it as such a. So when I saw the initial symptoms of her radiation poisoning and her like losing portions of it because of the poisoning, I was like, okay, this is really hitting her hard because this is something that's so important to her. I'm like, this man knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about. He knows this stuff.
Thanks.
So when it comes to her interaction with Brother Voodoo and him having to make the deal with the spirit and everything, and when they were talking in his library and she's like, you know, maybe I can get my magic back, and he was like, I don't really think so. I was like, oh. So it is her ancestral magic something that you're also considering? Because I do, I think I did point out in the video that like her and Wanda teamed up together at one point, and Wanda showed her, like, was like, you know how to do magic. You've been knowing how to do magic. And she's like, this is how you do it, and this is how you put it in your lightning. And that was something so fun to see. Is that something else like to be considered because it is technically part of her, since she is like that goddess, and then they did give her that ancestry with the magic due to her hair color and all that stuff?
I had to like try to see how I can consolidate that with her history, and it's the fact that she's been around for like 50 years, and moments where she has explored her magic can probably be limited to like 5 issues of comics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the fraction is that small. So I knew I wanted to explore it, but I need to be careful about how much space I give to it, because then it will go against our character traits, you know. So that means Storm herself, if you look at that ratio, that means she knows about her magical heritage, but she is hesitant to explore it for one reason or the other. You know, some of my current theories, while I'm still working this through, is maybe it reminds her too much of her mother. You know, so it's imagine losing a parent very young, and you have to go into the profession of that parent. for some reason you just constantly have to think about that parent while you do that thing. Oh, I wonder how she went through this. I wonder how she, you know, and that might be something she might not be totally comfortable with going through like every single time. So yes, a magic would play a role, but they will be coming in and out just bit by bit, bit by bit, bit by bit. I think she does use a spell in Storm 7. Yeah. So it's bit by bit kind of thing. So that's what I'm trying to play with. And Voodoo saying that is also trying a little like to speak to the audience, you know, like normally Storm is magical royalty. If it's by blood, she's probably like the highest ranking magical user in the Marvel universe, because she's linked to Ashtar, she's linked to Ashake, she's linked to the second Sorcerer Supreme ever. Mm-hmm. And I linked that also with the first Sorcerer Supreme. So she's magical royalty by blood, you know, her hair, everything, genetics, everything. Magic is supposed to come easy for her. And yet, if you're going to list like the top 5 magical users in Marvel, she's not going to be there.
Right.
So
yeah, I don't keep her there. Yeah, definitely. So yeah.
So I can see someone like Voodoo being like, "Oh, jeez, you're just wasting your talent for crying out loud." You know, that kind of thing. Like, everybody else has to like go through grueling this, sacrifice this to a god to make your destiny more susceptible to this, make a deal with this and this. You could just do all this easily, and yet lightning.
That's all you got, lightning. Okay. I'm so curious. I don't know how much you can tell about the future story beats, but I've noticed that in a couple of different instances, whether that be Tony or her, where especially in like the issue 4 where she's speaking to her father. She speaks with her prior marriage with T'Challa and being a queen of Wakanda very highly. Like, she is very fond of those memories. Are we going to explore? Because I know you kind of brought back a lot of the men in her history to have conversations with. And I feel like, at least for me, T'Challa is probably like the most infamous relationship she's had in Marvel Comics. And that was such a monumental moment in the comics. How much are you going to explore their history and like their current, not relationship romantically, but like where they are just as a, I guess you could say, at a platonic level.
And he needs to come back from the dimension he escaped to first.
Hey, she's the eternal storm right now. If anybody can do that, I feel like it'd be her at this point.
All right.
And I think he froze it.
He feels up for a second. Oh man, he's about to say some heat too. I can feel he's about to say heat too.
Sorry,
we're back.
I think T'Challa fans got to my network. So I've written a couple of issues where it makes an appearance, but they are very, 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 very small, just very minute, and that's because I want to make the interactions gradual, and I know Jed probably has something cooking in the Avengers series, but I still want to address this as the Storm solo. Even if they eventually start interacting perfectly there, I still want to make the interaction in the Storm solo gradual till we get to something I'm planning towards the end. Because besides romantic things, they do have a platonic relationship as well, and things that if you're going to talk about Storm and the men in her life, you can't skip over T'Challa. And it's something that, despite how things ended, Storm would still go through with it again if given the chance.
Mm-hmm. Sailor, that's all I needed to hear. I was so.
I would love for them to interact more. And when she came to the team, in the Avengers comic, and immediately he was like, I'm going to go to another dimension and start a game. And I was like, to avoid saying good morning to your ex-wife, what is happening? I would rather start a gang in another dimension than say good morning to my ex-wife, who I fumbled. Best thing in my life ever. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay.
Hey, when you mess up that bad, you kind of, it's hard on up to that.
They just wanted him to say hello. He hadn't spoken to her the entire time they were on the team. It was literally like 2 days.
It was too awkward.
It was. I blame Sam for that, because Sam was messy by even going to go maybe, get her.
maybe if T'Challa was one that reached out to that team, it would made it less awkward. But you know, it's like, you're here, I'm here, what happens next, that kind of thing. Like, I think I've just gone on a mission.
Yeah. I'm going to go to another dimension and start a gang.
Yeah, we'll talk later. We'll talk later. with this story, though, I'm so curious as to what your message. You had to, like, when the story's all said and done, and people read through the story, is there like a certain message you're trying to convey to people through her story arc that she has?
That was my question.
Hey, you have to move faster.
Sorry. So I'm trying to approach this in a kind of bigger scope kind of thing. And that means the messages might be more than one.
Mm.
So some will touch and go in time, and some will keep exploring, you know, like issue one is about truth, you know. And even though people tell you, you know, tell the truth, and ultimately the truth is good, but it doesn't always feel good, and the repercussions are not always good. So and that's the capital T truth, you know. Like, if you live by the truth, people think, oh, your life will be smooth, but you're going to get in a lot of trouble, you know. And so you should know, even though it's a good thing to do, you should know, should be aware of the consequences of saying the truth, you know, in tough times, you know. It's about death itself, you know. How do you address death? And understanding people that are going through challenging mortality as well. You know, you could see it in the real world itself, where people were judging Storm for actions in issue 3. And you're like, she's dying, you know? And she's trying to look for some comfort one way or the other. And they're still like, oh, she cheated on her ex-husband that they already, like, divorced. Like, how is that even cheating? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so you can see that constantly, you know. Okay, for example, you see even like grandmothers, maybe, you know, they are dying, or maybe they have cancer or something, you know. Yes, the doctor has given them all these things that they should not do, just so that they can stay longer, you know. And they're like, I just want a cup of ice cream, you know. And the kid is like, but the doctor said you can't have a cup of ice cream, you know. And like, she's still going to die, but she just wants to have the feel of ice cream probably one last time. And all you are thinking about is, but the doctor said, you know. And we lose our compassion. It's when people die that we remember to be compassionate towards them. The odd thing is, when people are in that process of dying process, we still are not as understanding as we should, you know. So there's that, you know. There's relationship with power itself, you know. Storm is going to be, she has accrued financial power right now. We've not seen that play a big role. She's just accrued cosmic power as well, you know. What's our relationship with power going to be? What does power do to you? You know, power pushes you. Power makes you want to do more things, you know. What will your relationship with power be? and let's see how Storm will react to Power. You know, so there, I know people tend to say, you know, your story should have one major thing they are saying, but I think when you're working in long story form, things like this, where you're going to be telling these stories for, I don't know, 30 issues, if things go well, will probably be about, you know, a couple of years. And you don't, I don't think you should only have one thing to say for that long. I think you should have more things to say. You should be growing with the readers and having, you know, deep things and life lessons each month. So even though a TV show might get away with 5 episodes, you know, saying one thing, it's understandable because it's 5 weeks. So learning something in a month is okay. But when these things are coming out monthly, I think you should have more things to say.
Agreed.
I'm very curious here because I noticed in the beginning of the issue that Storm placed her sanctuary in his in general has decided to reside within Atlanta, Georgia. Me living in Atlanta, Georgia, and being from Atlanta, being from Georgia myself, I found that so amazing to me, obviously, because I'm rooting for the home team. But I've noticed that her, as well as like Brielle Brooks, Blade's daughter, there's a lot more Black characters that are like taking their residence within Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm curious as to what the decision was behind that and making that where she decided to be versus where the X-Men are, or maybe back in Africa or somewhere else.
Editorial decision.
Got you. Because I was like, man, she's in Atlanta. Like, why are all these Black characters in Atlanta right now? Like, they're putting them all in Atlanta. Okay, that's okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, gotcha. I would play around with it, but it's. I couldn't think. I don't know who I would have chosen, if I would have chosen Atlanta 2 or not, but I didn't have to go through that thinking process since that decision had already been made.
Gotcha. Okay. I was so curious about that.
So speaking of the death part that you brought up, now I think when I did the review for the third issue, I said at the end, I was like, when I saw all the death sprites, I was like, she's going to go see Dr. Doom. By the way, Dr. Doom summoning her on a giant penguin was so funny to me. But when the death sprites were falling, I was like, he's going to be the cause of her dying. I just know it. And then we get to the end of this issue where he's like, oh, you don't have your powers? Cool. I'm going to give them to you. And I was like, please don't do that. And then she gave them to me. I was like, no, why would you do such a thing? only for her to die. So it definitely gave me Mummy vibes with Death is Only the Beginning, where when she died and then came back as Eternal Storm, I was like, I knew it was going to be him. I knew it was going to be his fault. And then he's in the background, of course, fighting with this giant. But I was like, you know, he may have caused her death, but he's like, you know, kind of defending her body back there. Was there anything in particular you were thinking about when, like, you decided that that's how you were going to bring Eternal Storm about?
It's a reference to an old story arc in Uncanny X-Men called The Rogue Storm, where Storm gets an awakening when they try to infiltrate Castle Doom. And Storm has to like descend riding lightning and has to like have this dinner date kind of thing with Doom, you know, and they eat. And even though Doom is this like evil, powerful person, Storm is like, you know, I think this guy is kind of, you know, good looking, you know, that kind of thing. And Doom 2 is like, you know, this chick doesn't like, he's not scared of me and stuff like that. So they're like checking each other out, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, the chemistry there, yes, and yes, Doom messes things up, trying to like play a power move. And, you know, when he encased her in chrome, you know, the claustrophobia kicks in, and then she unlocks this powerful form of her called the Rogue Storm, where all her clothes turn white and gold, and she can control all the weather on planet Earth, and she starts talking almost like third person, I am the goddess, you know, and starts spouting like grand statements, and, you know, challenging Doom, like, you know, do you think you are, kind of thing, you know. And I'm like, especially with one word or that Doom coming up, I'm like, I want to have this again, and but the results will not be Rogue Storm, will be Eternal Storm. Let's, if I'm going to bring this, because Eternal Storm basically is Rogue Storm. I'm just trying to explain it in context of all the continuity. So my plan was, I want to bring this form back to current continuity. I would like to bring it back the way it was originally introduced through Doom messing up.
That's amazing. Well, you do have two questions in the comment section. Hold on. Let me bring up the first one.
Yeah,
I think it's about Harubi.
Yeah, Jed McKay's stories are behind. They haven't caught up yet. You can also see it with even his X-Men team and some of the interactions and stuff. His Avengers run is still behind.
Okay, so, and this is the second one.
Sorry, even Iron Man's armor. Iron Man has changed his armor in the ongoing, in his ongoing. He's still wearing his old armor in Iron Man is how you know that they've not caught up yet.
Gotcha, okay.
It is, yeah, second question.
Yeah, she was over the radiation poisoning in issue 3. It's just that she was still dying and we don't know why. And now we know it's because, you know, Eternity was probably still trying to get her to die so that she can be reawakened as Eternal Storm. You know, from the first issue, you get the narration saying things like the universe wants her dead and Eternity is the universe, you know. So from how that shard came straight for her but almost killed her, you know, to the radiation, to everything, you know, it's almost like Eternity is trying to control the fates, that's space, time, chances, everything, to increase the chances of her dying. So that's why she was always surrounded by death sprites. Like, the universe wants you dead. You know,
it's like, damn, why won't she die? Like, she's trying to find
Brother Voodoo's brother came out and was like, why isn't she dead? I was like, please.
Like, so many death sprites, and she's still alive. Ow, like, you know. So she was over the poisoning then, but it's just that she was still, it seemed like she was still dying, you know. And that's because of Eternity. Eternity needed her dead. So, and but she's technically not an herald. She's a host.
I think I'm curious about it. It was a quick thing in the fourth issue, but I'm so curious as to a little bit more of like your life imprint on this. Is this moment speaks to Doom and him, his ability to be him. But also in regards to you, when it comes to the dish with the okra and rice and like the shrimp that he prepares for, is that like a personal dish that you grew up eating, or is that something that you kind of created for the character?
Oh, or is there a history? I ate okra a lot. I ate it like H-A-T-E. I despise it, you know. So
really,
yeah. I'm never going to touch that thing. But so too slimy for me, like no way, hell no. But from my research, you know, and also the Princess and the Frog, I've always loved, you know, that idea of gumbo, you know. So I think that was the first time I edited. That was the first time I edited in it was the Princess and the Frog as a Nigerian, you know. So I was even confused. I thought they were talking about gumball. Like, why are they chewing gumball? Why are they staring gumball? Like, what's happening? And they're like, oh, it's gumball. Like, it's it's a dish, you know, so I've always had interest in it. I've always kept it at the back of my mind. And that visual of, I've forgotten her name, but the princess there and their dad cooking gumbo together.
Tiana, so I
wanted to kind of almost like replicate that. So it came from that and some research.
So do you have a canon reason why Doom knows her father's recipe?
In my head, he probably did something crazy like going to the afterworld to be like, you know.
So let me get that recipe after that.
Go back in time or something. I think one thing that I've always, that I'm admiring about the Storm that you're writing is her interactions with Doom, be it here and then in the Avengers comic, definitely reflect how she's always talked to that man. Because she has never backed down from a conversation with him. And I remember that I think I mentioned also was when they were having dinner, I think when she was like the Queen of Mars. And he was like trying to flirt a little bit. And she was like, he said something about her marriage. And she was like, are you sure you want to talk about marriages?
Talk about marriages now.
And he was like, oh. And then there's just like the one where he beat the shit out of T'Challa to make a point, put that man in a hospital to make a point. And I was like, he is in love with that woman. And I just want somebody, I want someone else to say it. And I'm like, when I was reading this last issue, I was like, I want him to say it. I want it in here that he is in love with that woman.
Because he dirty Mac so bad. He's like, you sure you want to be with him? You sure about that? Like, I'm here. Like, I'm God. I'm the Sorcerer Supreme. I'm God Emperor Doom. Like, who's better than me? I've conquered. I've done things that no other man can do. And I'm just like, he is laying on the dick right now.
Dude was ready to, like, end his pastry chef just because
something. Over dessert. That was so funny. Because
I was like,
dessert.
She said, I thought she was saying, to something he said, but I realized, she didn't like the pastry. Then was like, oh, you don't like the pastry? So I,
let me kill my pastry.
And he doesn't react when she's like, he doesn't react. He keeps talking and he says, no. And first, another, like, all the guards already know, like, this pastry chef is gone, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I was like, they don't understand.
I absolutely
like, do my balls incompetence, you know.
Right. I absolutely love that.
That was like
they're going to make me look bad in front of my crush, you know.
in front of this woman, really.
You make me look bad, you know.
It's so amazing how well you've captured. Like, Storm is one thing, because again, this is your main mission to capture Storm. That's like the central person of the story. But you're doing so well, like capturing characters that are subsidiary, like Doom. Like even the brief interactions here with Tony was amazing to me. With Brother Voodoo, where like it feels like these characters are who they're supposed to be. It didn't feel like they're saying or doing anything out of the norm, even in like casual conversation. Because I've read a little bit of Strange Academy, and I was seeing Brother Voodoo in that. Not Brother Voodoo, Dr. Voodoo in that. And it seems consistent to everything I've read with the character. Like you did. Again, it's not really a question, but you're doing an amazing job at capturing everyone that you have appear in these comics so far.
Agreed.
Yeah, thank you. It's hard work. I hope I'm able to like constantly do it, because you have to like read a bunch of stuff and try to like figure out the like collective abbreviation of their voice and try to get it, you know. So yeah. Sometimes
I know
you have
one relationship I definitely want to see is her and Wanda.
Yeah.
Because, and the reason so is because I say it all the time. Wanda does not like them people. She does not like the mutant people. And she doesn't. And she does things I've noticed when they've carried it over from Decimation, where she felt bad because she did something out of anger, which was essentially Magneto's fault. And she did something out of anger. She felt bad, and she spent her time trying to rectify it, only to still be like kind of shut out. And I'm just like, you've been around mutants for all of 15 minutes. You stay with the Avengers. So when Storm and Wanda became on the same team, I was like, that is amazing. And I would absolutely like, when you guys announced her solo series, I was like, I would love to see her and Wanda do something else together, because when they've teamed up, they were great. In conversations they've had, they were great together. And I just really would love to see that.
Fingers crossed.
In that same token, I've seen Ernie talk about it in regards to the Eternal Storm and the Phoenix possibly having something down the line. Are there any other celestial characters you can reveal making an appearance, like a Thor? I know her and Thor have a pretty good relationship in the comics.
He's one of her too.
Who's not? Yeah, I am. Who's not?
I think Thor, Galactus, and Silver Surfer for Storm 7.
Okay. That's all I needed to know.
See, and I like the bringing back of Thor, actually, because in the Avengers issues, when she was debating whether or not she wanted to come to the team, and she went to talk to Thor about it, and Thor was leaving because he was like going to trial or being accused of murder, and he didn't want that spot to, you know, dampen what the Avengers were trying to do. And they had their thunder and lightning moment holding hands outside. I was like, please, I don't know why, but I love the idea of the two of them together. That is just, I was like, if somebody would just give it a try. I would love it so much. And it's like, he's one of the first people, I think, to really uplift her talent as a thunder goddess versus her just being a mutant. And I have always loved that for the relationship between the two of them. And I wish more people would do that, because, you know, Cyclops kind of like tries to skip over it. And I know when she went up against Charles, when he tried to get back in her head, and she was like, absolutely not.
Those are the kind of interactions we expect in Storm 7. I keep saying Storm 7 because that's our 50th anniversary issue, so it's a big one. So it's basically, let's see if she's a real Storm goddess when the real Storm gods show up.
Okay.
I love that so much. I really do.
So we're going to be having Chak, you know, Shango, Susanoo, and Mamarangan, you know, and Thor. So let's see.
That's going to be amazing.
I'm very excited for that. Absolutely.
Do you have any plans, or maybe the studio has any plans of like hosting any kind of like when any convention stateside for like meet and greets with any of the fans of the run?
I'm still working on stuff because, you know, when you're in Nigeria, visa is like stressful stuff.
Yeah.
So I need to look at my schedule to be able to do the whole long process thing.
Yeah, let me know. Because I'm at my local comic shop, I've told them, hey, I need every single cover, every variant issue of this book pulled for me. I would love for you to sign a couple of them for me. Because those, I think, if in the future, if not already now, this, at least to me, is the best Storm run I've ever read. And I think it would be one of the better ones to ever exist. So I think this is going to be something very valuable in the future. So I would love for you to sign.
Absolutely agree.
Thank you. A little note, we also try as much as possible for every issue to have a little like important moment happen, you know, like, oh, this issue is the first appearance of Egon. You know, this is the first time where she wears this costume. So we try to like spread it across every issue so that every issue is like important, as an important moment for for your collection, basically.
Yeah, so this is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Before we go, I do just a couple, I guess. So, I forgot the one that I was going to ask, so I'll just ask the other one. as a writer, do you have any advice for anybody just writing in general or trying to break into comics or anything like that? Do you have any advice for them?
I think, you know, you want to be careful giving advice because you're not even like sure what people are responding to with your stuff and everything. But I would say writing is both a form of science and art. And I think people usually focus too much on one or the other. And it's good to try to balance things. You know, when you start talking about the science, that's like, oh yeah, at page two or at act this thing, this should happen, at this should happen. Like, oh, if you've studied all the different type of stories, like, oh, Joseph Campbell, this, these are the points in the stories where this should happen. They all work, they are all good, but you've seen those movies where you're like, everything is just happening, like you can almost call it and everything. So yeah, there's that. And you've also seen like very artsy stuff. They're like, oh, this is not following any structure. This is, the writer has gone, is a loose cannon, is a renegade. This person just expressing so much emotions and everything, and you're enjoying it. And at some point you're like, okay, I think that's enough. So I think it's the balance of both that actually makes stories interesting. You know, bring those raw emotions, bring those random visuals, bring all those cool things that you like. It might be something crazy as, oh yeah, Storm headbutts the Juggernaut, you know, and you know, what happens, you know, and you know, crazy stuff like that. Have all those stuff. And then why still balancing it up with, okay, this is how I pace the story. Let's have the teaser in the first two pages. Let's have this and this, you know. So I think balancing arts and the science of writing, it's a good thing.
Okay, I remembered my other question. if they were to bring her to the screen, big screen, would you want them to do a story that's like yours, or would you want them to just like straight origin story and then pick up this is any kind of random story later, I guess?
Now I don't know if I'm selfish because I wrote it, you know what, just do like an anime adaptation kind of thing and start with episode one and just follow me.
Hey, I don't blame you. I say the same right. thing.
Yes, right.
I was scared you're gonna ask my casting question. I'm like, please don't ask this man that casting question.
No, I don't have a casting question. But those were
I'm not even good at that. I hardly remember like celebrity names and stuff. And anybody shows me, I'm like, oh yeah, that's good. And someone shows me, that's good too. And that's good too. So I was like, yeah.
I've always had kind of like in my head different castings for certain people. But then when like they pick somebody and I'm like, as long as they're good, I don't care. And then like, even when they did Moon Knight, Oscar Isaacs was absolutely perfect. I just, that was fabulous casting. But if they decide, whoever they decide to pick, I just, please do.
I think I think for some characters I can see like, oh, this actor would be good. But for Storm and Wonder Woman, I'm always like, I think you just have to like draw them and make it animation, because I don't think what I have in my head, there's a human being that will have that.
Yeah,
that would be that, and probably still be good at acting, you know. For example, I think of the Trinity in DC. I mm-hmm. think Wonder Woman is the tallest, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
How many actors, you know, would have that kind of body proportions and everything, and still be taller than, let's say, Henry Cavill was to Superman, and still be taller than Henry Cavill. You know, it's like, I think you're going to struggle with that, you know. So, you know, things like that, you know. Storm 2 is this tall, you know, majestic person that is muscular but not too muscular. That's, and so many times, like, just make it a cartoon, you know. That's how it just seems in my head.
The only person, I think this is like, everybody's talked about this for years at this point now, because they've kind of, it's too late now, but like Angela Bassett, after seeing her performance in Black Panther 2, like, she was the only person I've seen on screen that I think embodied that character. Yeah, like the elegance, like she has somewhat of the body type as well, and the acting ability. Like, it's hard to find all that.
Everything.
Yeah, I've seen people say Keke Palmer because she does a good Angela Bassett impression. There's a million different actors you can go with, but for one way or the other, I've seen people disagree on whatever it may be. Or whatever it may be. At this point, I've talked about a couple of friends. I think I've talked to Kayra about it as well. When you look at what all the casting choices that's made the MCU great up until this point, none of them have been like the, or like when they were announced, people were just unanimously like, oh yeah, that's the guy. It's always been like, oh, I'm not sure about this person, rather that'd be RDJ or Chris Hemsworth as Thor. Or even if you're looking back at the DC side of things with Heath Ledger as the Joker, none of them had like the public positive perception, but you just let them go. And whoever was in charge of casting just saw something in that person, and they transformed into that individual. So, yeah, I'm just like, you never know. You never know what happens.
Yeah, so just like this comment said, please just do her correctly. That's all. Whatever you do, just do her correctly. Yeah. I beg.
Right.
What's the point of perfect casting if she has like three lines in the entire movie?
Exactly.
It's going to be so tough to do her. The X-Men in general, because there's such a historic,
Age of Apocalypse or something. Like, we don't even know if the person that was cast as Storm is a good Storm or not, because how much dialogue did she have, how much screen time did she have. So like, you don't even have any memories to be like, oh, do I hate or like her Storm? It's just like, Storm was there, and she suddenly had a mohawk or something. Like, okay.
Yes. Agreed, yes. Because I do not remember her talking nearly as much as she should have been. I don't remember her at all. So I just remember everybody's like, I hate her. And I was like, what did she say? So what did she say? I mean, I didn't hate her, but I... Of course, she
but definitely you didn't like her done, too. Like, but, just
yeah, movie. Like she was in the movie and she used her powers. Yeah, exactly. A couple times. I was like, okay, cool.
Plus, like, with characters like her, I think another thing people are gonna be mad about is like the power depiction, because she's so strong in the comic. You can't show that on live action without like millions of DGI money going into it, because I think Doom talked about it. He's like, you could have just like teleported here, like flashed here in an instant.
Yes,
and you see her chaos craters. Like, it's like she's so strong. You think same thing with Thor. We've done this with Thor, where the most we got was what we got out of probably like Infinity War, where he got the super boost from Stormbreaker. I know that probably cost him so much money just for like the 3 minutes that they showed him showcasing that power. Now imagine her in a whole movie where she's just like doing things like that. It's a lot.
Yeah. So that was like, just make it an anime or something. Just make it like
that. Yeah.
Right. And not like the X-Men anime that came out. A good one.
You know, I hated the story they went with it, but her depiction of that, I thought was dope. I love the way they depicted her abilities and her as a character in that.
Her abilities, yes. The story and them when they were talking, I was like, please.
Yeah.
It should have been like a silent movie or something. I was like, I don't know what's going on or why, but this is really bothering me. But that is it for me. Do you have anything else?
No, I have no further questions. I would love to speak with you as the run goes on a little bit further, because like you said, it's going to be a long thing. I'll get your contact information from Kiori if you're okay with it, and or reach out, because I would love to have more conversations as the run progresses, because you're doing, again, you're doing amazing things with this character. I have never read anything in my long time of being a comic book fan as great as this in depicting the character, where you're going through her historical defeats and showcasing her at her core as a character, as well as writing new things for it. This for me going forward, this is the Storm in my mind. And I'm really enjoying it. For anybody that's followed me in my content, I'm really big on characters like her or Blade or Black Panther or Static getting that representation and getting front and center. So people, please, if you're watching this and you want to see more amazing things like this, please go buy those books at your local comic shop in physical. Like, go spend the money on physical the things you copies. Want to see more of. Please.
Yes, and 100% I am definitely enjoying this. Between this, Kill All Immortals, and actually, that's it. Between this and Kill All Immortals, these two books are like my absolute favorite books right now, with Storm just, and I think it's really just like the mythology of it all, like being like the accurate depiction of all of the things of her, just I love it. And please continue with the absolute amazing fashion, because my girl has never looked better. Like, she is absolutely gorgeous on every page, and I love it so much. So thank you so much for agreeing to do this, and I will see you guys at our next appointment.
Yeah, thank you. It was my pleasure being here. I enjoyed myself.
Yay. All right.